Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Board, it was always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
Rich the Education Gadfly.
Sex, sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering,
learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face, in your face.
Listen to your words that they be preaching, cause here's the Education Gadfly Show. Yeah, it's the Education Gadfly Show.
Hello, this is your host Mike Petrilli, the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man you saw on the red carpet Monday night, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Not as good as Daniel Day-Lewis.
That's right. Actually, the Oscars were Sunday night. Rick, what do you take by this? All of the best actor, best actress, supporting actor, supporting actress, all Europeans. What does this mean about the American education system?
Really?
Is this evidence that we are squeezing arts education out of the classroom? I mean, if this is not compelling, I think I just saw a Jack Jennings report about this the other day. Did you enjoy the Oscars? I know you're a big movie watcher.
Yeah, I think this was maybe the first time I ever really watched them. I was out in Santa Barbara with my folks, and they had an Oscar viewing party.
Yeah?
I got to say, tedious. I'd much rather see the movies.
Huh, yeah. You've probably seen them all. Did you agree?
I thought No Country for Old Men was pretty not bad. How about you?
Well, we have a baby. I haven't seen any movie that's not on Netflix.
And Javier Bardem is a much better looking man with his real haircut rather than that wedge cut they made him get for the flick. So.
Wedge cut. Almost sounds
I think
like
that's what it's called. I might have wedgie. Made them. Did I make that up? No, wedge cut? I don't know. But yeah, he looked like Doris Day in the movie, but he looks better like in real life.
Interesting.
He's
all
quite
right.
The hunk.
Quite the hunk.
Quite the hunk.
Right.
I was digging on it.
You're just like you, Rick. You are quite the hunk, and we're going to talk about a new report by Frederick M. Hess that's out today.
Boom.
So, of course, we're going to play Pardon the Gadfly. We're going to hear from Jeff Cooner with his Education Outrage of the Week, and Liam will impart some education news of the weird. So let's get started. Liam, pardon the gadfly.
Rick Hess has another report out, this one produced for the brand spanking new Common Core organization. Rick, tell us about it.
Tell you about Common Core? As I understand it, Common Core is a small D.C.-based group. Oh, you meant to tell you about the report. Report, what we did, Checkerfin and Diane Ravitch in 1986 got NAEP to do a National Assessment of Education Progress to do a study of what 17-year-olds know about literature and history. The answer was pretty disheartening, but we actually hadn't bothered to track this for 20-odd years. The NAEP every so often asks history questions, but only a third are actually stuff you know, and the NAEP doesn't ask about literature. So what we did a little earlier this year was we did a national study of 17-year-olds to see how much do they know about history and about literature. And the answer is that when given a battery of 33 relatively straightforward questions, multiple choice questions about history and literature, stuff like who was Adolf Hitler, who led the Revolutionary Army, who said, I have a dream.
Rick, did they have to identify who Harriet Tubman was?
I do not believe they did.
Okay, so Jeff Cooner might have been able to pass this test.
That's true. That's right. I remember the tirade about, but I guess Checker in USA Today said it's a good thing to know Harriet Tubman.
That's right.
So I see a Checker Jeff deathmatch somewhere in our future. Anyway, so it turns out when asked these kinds of questions, about 73%, they could get about 73% of the history questions right, about 57% of the literature questions right, about 67% of the questions right overall, about 2 out of 3. I think my favorite finding was that less than half of folks could place the Civil War in the right half century.
I think most shocking for me was that a quarter of students didn't know who Adolf Hitler was.
That was, and especially, I mean, how many times has John Kennedy been mentioned in the past 6 months in the context of Obama?
Right.
Only two-thirds of students knew, the S not, what your country can do for you speech.
All right, so let's just go into overtime just a little bit here, Rick. So what do you think? So kids don't know a lot about history or literature, or they don't know as much as we wish. A new group out to promote the liberal arts. Is this No Child Left Behind's fault? Yes or no?
You can't say anything causal about this. This is a cross-section. 20-odd years ago, the study was done. You can't compare them directly because of the methods. But it's not clear that we're doing a lot worse. On the other hand, as always, it's not clear that we're doing any better.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of factors that can be blamed. One, you can certainly blame the emphasis on math and reading rather than the broader liberal education subjects. You can also worry about content knowledge of teachers in these subjects. Mm-hmm. You can worry about youth culture and how much time kids actually spend reading and thinking about these questions. A mm-hmm. lot of possible culprits that we might research and might think about.
But again, that some good news. You know, 97% knew the "I Have a Dream" speech. It shows if schools teach something, kids learn it.
That's well said.
Next question.
Two schools in suburban Washington, D.C., one in Montgomery County, Maryland, the other in neighboring Prince George's County, are alike yet different. Both enroll similar populations of low-income students, but one, Broad Acres in Montgomery County, seems to be providing its students a much better chance for success. What are the takeaways?
Well, Liam, this was a fascinating article in the Washington Post. These schools are about a mile from my house, where I live in Tacoma Park, Maryland, and what's fascinating is, you know, the article was very much focused on resources, that the Montgomery County system is very affluent, is able to bring all kinds of resources to Broad Acres in terms of money, in terms of capacity, and they have done an amazing job turning that school around. Whereas this other school, Adelphi, is in Prince George's County. Compared to the other schools in Prince George's County, it's one of many failing schools and struggling schools. It has not gotten the same amount of resources or attention, and the Prince George's system doesn't have the same amount of capacity. The report did not get into some other issues, like our recent finding in our Fordham study, also written by Rick Hess, on teacher unions, that the Prince George's County teacher union contract is quite restrictive, whereas Montgomery County's is much more flexible. That, again, would tie the hands of principals. The point is, the context for these schools matter, and these school systems matter. And the question is, you know, could Prince George's County do a better job with these schools if it just had the money? Is that the is that it, Rick? Is it just about money?
No.
Okay. Would you like to elaborate? I mean, if they had the money, for example, to bring in the reading specialists and to do the more training and they had the counselors and all that kind of stuff, I mean, wouldn't that make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it would make a difference. I mean, but the point here that we often forget is that the advantages of, that a Montgomery County or a Fairfax or Westchester enjoy are kind of numerous, and they're structural. That if you're somebody and you're going to teach, that these guys get their first pick of the teaching pool. You know, highly qualified.
But hold on, Rick. I mean, these schools are—they're both high poverty. It's not like, sure, you know. Usually, that's because teachers want to teach in affluent
areas. Teachers apply for jobs, they apply to teach by systems. You don't apply by neighborhoods. So you apply to Montgomery County or Fairfax County. That's a premium job coming out of a teaching program.
Even teaching on in the corner of the district. That's
even teaching in the corner of the district because you're going to get into Montgomery County. You're going to be in the Montgomery County system. You're going to be transferring internally with Montgomery County downstream. So one, there's just advantages there. Two, Montgomery County is going to have structural advantages in terms of parental involvement that you're not going to find in Prince George's County. Not school by school. But the thing is that schools don't exist in isolation. If Prince George's County is trying to handle dozens of schools where they need to focus their efforts, and Montgomery County is able to bring resources to bear on just a couple of schools, that matters a ton, and it matters a ton partly because the county context matters. I mean, for me, the takeaway here is that strategies which might get a troubled school where it needs to be in Montgomery County can't be mimicked and replicated and just transported to other contexts necessarily. You might actually need a whole different strategy when you're working in a different venue.
All right. Well, I wish we had more time for this, but I would say that weighted student funding, you know, it only makes sense that the schools should be getting the same amount of funding. It is ridiculous that being a mile away, if it's true that one school is getting a lot more funding than the other, that's nuts.
Teachers across the country, tired of being besmirched online by their students, are fighting back. Some districts have hired private investigators to track down pupils posting inappropriate content. Lots are taking kids to court over their web antics. Rick, good approach?
Jeez, that's what we need. More lawsuits and lawyers in the schools. Outstanding.
Isn't your fiancé a lawyer?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I tell her to stay the heck away from the schools. I say, Joe, not within 100 yards. You and the guns.
That's a good policy. Mm-hmm. We should have lawyer-free zones.
Mm-hmm.
I bet somebody's already come up with that idea.
If not, we can go somewhere with it. I don't know. I mean, you know, frankly, I mean, so as I understand it, what some of these kids are doing is, right, they're getting pretty abusive of teachers online. There was an incident a couple months ago where some kid posted online the personal phone number for somebody who's responsible for scheduling snow removal and snow day cancellations and such for Fairfax County. The family was inundated with calls, had to change their phone numbers. You know, if teens are doing this kind of stuff, I think it's entirely appropriate for steps to be taken that make sure that educators have their privacy and their rights respected.
But it's going to be a total morass because right now the Supreme Court says that kids have a right to free speech in their schools. And so suddenly this becomes a First Amendment question. Mm-hmm. What's protected? What's not? You know, if you followed Justice Clarence Thomas's line of thinking, it says, hey, you know, these are kids. They're not adults. They shouldn't have any right to free speech. And schools have the ability to maintain order and discipline. You might have a more common sense approach.
Well, I mean, that's right. But we're talking, I think, as I understand it, a lot of this is outside the walls of the school. A lot of this is cyberspace kind of issues. And the reality is that there are laws that apply here. If you
are a morass, Rick. A morass.
If you're
all right, that's all. We got to keep moving.
You,
on,
my goodness.
We were just blabbing
you
on too much.
You're just anti-teacher,
today.
Aren't you?
I'm not anti-teacher.
You're just all about letting kids beat up on teachers.
No. Look, I'm saying that this
you're
whole
saying you want kids
culture
to beat up on teachers.
Of litigiousness is in the end bad for teachers. That what we should know. I'm saying, look, there should be some common sense. I think that you should be able to have a school that says, hey, kids, come into the principal's office and let me talk to you about, you know, why you posted that YouTube video on your teacher.
And while the teacher's house is getting pelted with refuse.
I am pro teacher on this one.
Okay. I'm feeling you.
You know who else is pro teacher? Jeff Kooner. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you, Mike. I'm definitely pro teacher.
Yes, I know you are. I know you are. Jeff, you're looking pretty good today, relaxed. You don't look so outraged, but tell us, what is the education outrage of the week?
Mike, it's going to be double-barreled this week. The short outrage of the week is we at Fordham here have experienced a burglary. Our sister publication, Common Core, downstairs.
Sister organization.
Sister organization, right. Downstairs. Just minding her own business. Staff member was just working, you know, not hurting anybody, not doing anything to anybody. Boom. Somebody walks into the building, goes up to the 7th floor. She went off to the restroom or whatever. She was away from her desk. This snake, this sleaze bucket, this lowlife comes into her office and steals her wallet and just walks on out.
No, I mean, this is an outrage. I mean, and this is happening all over D.C., we understand. There's a rash of these sorts of crimes.
Well, I mean, you're not even safe in your own place of work anymore. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, what are we? I mean, are we, you know, are we the tobacco industry? Are we trial lawyers? Are we the teacher unions? No, we're not. We're just here doing good education research. We're a nonprofit group. We're not hurting anybody. This person comes in and steals us.
Implying that this person should go down the street two blocks away to the National Education Association at 1600 M Street and go around stealing their wallets?
No, I mean, look, I'm not in favor of, I'm not an anarchist. I'm not saying you should plunder or rob anybody else. But if you're going to rob somebody, why pick on an innocent nonprofit like Fordham? All we want to do is just tell the truth about education. We're just there speaking truth to power, shedding light on all the problems in education today. And this person comes in here like a thief in the night, like an assassin, coming in here and stealing this person's wallet. Now she's got to call up her credit card companies. I mean, the poor woman feels violated. It's outrageous.
It is outrageous. And I'll tell you, we're gonna have now more security protocols. We're going to lock the elevators, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I'm going to start packing a gun. I mean, if somebody comes in here and tries to take my wallet, I'll tell you right now, I don't get a gun control or no gun control. I'm blowing his head off.
Well, wow. Well, maybe you should wait for that handgun decision to come down from the Supreme Court just to be on the safe side. Got that hammer. Okay. Well, so that is outrageous.
It's outrageous. Now, for those listeners out there who think I'm somehow a little Limbaugh or some crazy right winger, that's a joke. I was just kidding. Actually, I am very pro gun control. I am Canadian, in fact. So I think that guns are way too rampant in this society. But to the real outrage of the week, there is a story in the Columbus Post-Dispatch that I think is very disturbing. You have 19 Columbus School District employees, mostly bus drivers, who have filed $60,000 worth of unemployment insurance claims. Now, what's their excuse? Were they fired? No. Were they dismissed? No. Are they going to be fired? No. They were told that they could not get routes during the summer to do sort of extracurricular work because they like to make some extra money because they had a high absentee rate. In other words, there's this new agreement now between the unions and between the school district that if you have 15 sick days in the District of Columbus. If you have more than 10 sick days a year that you take off, in other words, more than two-thirds, they consider that a high absentee rate. They want to discourage that because they have a problem with absenteeism. So you're knocked off from the list in terms of after-school busing, tutoring, driving students to athletic events, and the big one is school summer school bus routes. So what these bus drivers did, rather than just, I don't know, getting another job, they went out and filed an unemployment insurance claim. Now, of course, the district is very upset about this because this essentially is fraud. They are now looking to see whether these people will be disciplined or most likely terminated. Here's my view of the situation. These school bus drivers are paid throughout the entire year. Their income is spread all year round. So they're already receiving a check or a salary during the summer months, even though school school is out. If they wanted to supplement their income, they should do what other Americans do. Become a bartender, become a waiter, a waitress, work at a McDonald's. Hell, if you want, I don't know, pimp or prostitute, if that's what you have to do make money. But I mean, don't stand there and defraud the American taxpayer by claiming that you need unemployment insurance because you haven't been showing up at work all year round. You violated the terms of your union contract and you're no longer able to get these extra summer school routes. It's outrageous. And again, it's this sign of excessive and wasteful spending and abuse that we see in school district after school district after school district. And Mike, these people should be, I think, severely disciplined. And perhaps, I hate to say this, fired.
Well, you know, the one good thing about this story, Jeff, is that the Columbus district is standing up to them. So that's good to see because in a lot of these districts, you know, district leaders don't want to take the heat. And I can imagine people just allowing this sort of thing to happen behind the scenes. So it's good that they're standing up for them. But what's amazing, Jeff, is what? I mean, now is every teacher in the country that, you know, doesn't work during the summer, they get paid, many of them on a 12-month salary, but of course they're not working during the summer. Maybe they wanted to teach summer school, but there's not enough jobs for summer school. Are they all going to file unemployment?
You nailed it. I mean, are they going to file unemployment? Look, here's what I'm going to do, Mike. I got a couple of weeks off. I'm going to take some vacation time next week or in the next couple of weeks, and I'm going to file for unemployment insurance at the same time.
We're going to have to take next week off. I'm going to be on vacation. I mean, what is that? You and Liam, you're going to all, yeah.
Mike, what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to take a nice block of time in June. I'm going to take all my vacation time in June. And I'm going to say, you know what? I'm also going to file for unemployment insurance. And according to their rationale and their reasoning, I'm entitled to it. Mike, it's an abuse of the system. It's disgusting. It's outrageous. And it should be stopped immediately.
Thank you, Jeff. Jeff Kuhner with our education outrage of the week. All right. So what do you think, Rick? Bus drivers that already get paid through the summer, even though they're not working, you think they should be able to file unemployment insurance too?
Not a huge fan, but I'm sure that you would actually make sure that the lawyers weren't involved.
We're not involved. That's right.
I like that about you.
Because I'm anti-lawyer, pro-teacher. I'm not sure where I come down on bus drivers.
You're a complicated man.
All right. Well, it is now that time we wait for all week long. It is education news of the weird time. With our education news of the weird correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what's weird this week?
Seattle is having trouble revamping its student assignment plan because its computers are too old. According to the Seattle Times, quote, the district still uses two VAXs of late 80s to mid 90s vintage. They use old-fashioned disks and stand about 5 feet tall. Staff members sometimes look for used replacement parts on eBay, unquote. Even the later model VAX computers, those produced in the 90s, each have about 1/20th the power of an iPhone. The district wants to replace them, but if it does, it will have to postpone for an entire year implementation of its new student assignment policy. The current student assignment data is on the old computers, and with no way to transfer it to new machines, the district will need to painstakingly re-enter it all, which will, apparently, take a year. And that's education news of the weird.
Well, Liam, that's both weird and outrageous. But I think that there's a solution here waiting to be found, so they need to enter in all this information. I mean, couldn't they have students maybe during detention, sit down there and enter information into the computers?
Absolutely. I think that's a fantastic idea.
Why has nobody thought about this idea?
It's an outrage.
I mean, do we have to sit here in Washington in our think tank and come up with this stuff for them?
It's like we have to hold their hands through the entire process of educating children.
Thank you. There are solutions here, people. There are solutions. Rick, what do you think? You've written a lot about the structural problems in our schools, infrastructure. Is this just making your point?
It makes my point, baby.
Yeah. How old is your computer at AEI?
We try to update technology on a regular basis. Probably not more than 24 months.
Is that right? Well, if the schools all had the same kind of money that you conservative think tanks had, mm-hmm. with your big endowments and mm-hmm. your billionaire funders, we wouldn't be in this mess.
There you go.
All right.
Point
all
well
right.
taken.
Thank you, Rick. All right. Well, I am off next week. It's going to be skiing in North Carolina, if you can believe it.
Boom.
Where supposedly they have snow. But we'll be back the week after that.
Outstanding.
Until then.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.